My native language is not English, so my biggest worry is that I walk up here and say, I are Rilov. Okay, so bear with me when I make some of the, you know, more common grammar mistakes. Okay. I'm going to look at the schedule. Quickly, we'll do a short introduction of us, where we come from, that kind of thing. This whole lecture is about Trojans, so we'll be looking at why we actually want to talk about Trojans, why it's interesting to us. Harun here will give a brief history of Trojans and COVID channels. We'll look at a model that we use that's a hybrid model. We'll then look at the advances that Trojan technology has gone through and the advances that we've made. We'll do a quick demonstration, talk about how we're taking this further, and then possible fixes. Okay, SensePost. We're from a company called SensePost. We're a South African company. We traveled about 26, 27 hours to be here. So it's a really long flight. We're a company of about 10 people. We're not a very large company. I'm saying all of this because my financial director told me if I don't do this, he's not sending me again. So this is like the, you know, slash marketing kind of thing. We do network security analysis. Many of the guys here know this as pen testing. We specialize in external work. The speakers, like I said, my name is Rilov. This is Harun Mir. What's interesting, what I think is interesting about us is, if you think about...
You're modest.
If you think about networks as a city, and you would think about roads as the network itself, and, you know, maybe the houses as the hosts, and within the houses you have some safes and cabinets where data is stored, then there's a lot of people that actually concentrate on doing safe cracking. Okay, so they spend a whole lot of time looking at, I'm thinking about people like Calvo Fleck. He's here, he's a excellent dude in that regard. David Litchfield, Goebbels, those kind of people. They really concentrate on breaking a daemon or a host or one type of service. What we really look at and where we think that we are concentrating on more is really invading a city, okay? If the city was the company network. So we don't concentrate on particularly breaking one specific daemon or one specific service, but really to take the city in different ways. And be that by air, be that by any means possible. So really we're not that cool in terms of writing shellcode and that kind of thing. Don't ask us about opcodes and that. You get a concept today of tool makers and tool users. And the community like to think of tool makers as, you know, the lead people and tool users as the script kiddies. And I think there's a lot of room in between that two for people like us. I wouldn't see myself as a tool maker. We modify tools, that kind of thing. But I won't say that we're tool makers. We're not tool users either. And I think a lot of you people in here actually falls in the category between the two. Okay, that's us. The object of this presentation is really to look at Trojans, to look at bidirectional communication. We've been playing around a lot with getting data in and out of a network. It seems trivial, but as we will see later on, it is not. One of the applications of getting data in and out a network is that of a Trojan. And there's different ways of getting data in and out a network. We played around with tunneling data within DNS requests, tunneling data within ICMP packets, you know, with email going in and out. And I think one of the ways that we're going to show you is a very interesting way of getting data in and out the network. We spoke at the Black Hat Windows briefings in New Orleans this year, where we released a tool called Tratslach. Now, the name didn't really work out because most of you guys can't pronounce it. So we changed the name to Setiri, which I think is a little bit easier. And we made a lot of changes on Tratslach to make it better and more user-friendly, if you can say that. So really, this talk is really then giving the background of what we called Tratslach and how it worked. And then it focuses later on the advances that we've made in that and the changes that we've made and how we made it better, the problems that we had with it, and that sort of thing. Okay, why are we looking at Trojans? When you think Trojan, you think CDC, and you think back orifice, or you might think NetBus. And nobody's really concerned about that, because Trojans are the tools of script kiddies. I think one thing that most of us don't realize is that if you look at a graph that's got skill and motivation on the x-axis and number of users on the y-axis, then you got a kind of an inverse bell curve. So yes, people with very little skill and people with very little motivation uses Trojans a lot. And they tend to use the more kind of commercial Trojans like NetBus, Sub7, that kind of thing. And it's really for them to now Trojan, you know, their IRC, when they want to have revenge on someone on an IRC channel, something like this, they would Trojan that machine, you know, over dial up and take it and feel very good about themselves. But I think at the other side of the spectrum, you have your more kind of black hat, the real black hat people that uses, Trojans to gain access to machines, because it might be that that's the only way that you can actually get into the machine. I know, for instance, for a fact that a lot of the government agencies are also very interested in Trojan technology. The other thing about Trojans is you don't hear a lot about people being taken out by a Trojan. Why is that? If we look at the graph again, we'll see that, you know, if it's a script kiddie taking out his buddy, well, you know, it's not really significant. You won't read about it in BugTrack or in VolDev or something like that. And on the other side of the spectrum, it's kind of more hush hush. I mean, you don't hear about it because people won't tell you. It's not really considered a real threat, Trojans. No. I'm actually surprised to see as many people in this class here, because most people think that Trojans is something that we figured it out. We know what it does. We know that's do, eh? We know what it do, it does. You see, that stuff like that, I just don't get it. We kind of know how it works, that kind of thing, and so it's not a real threat. And I don't think if a security officer or network admin would make a list of problems, that Trojans would be on top of that list. If you think about it, you know, real criminals, like I said, don't write buffer overflows. So when you start to move away from just looking at IT related problems, then you see there's a whole new world opening up of possibilities how to, like I said, invade a city. What we have here is we have technology fuels technology. Okay, so you guys come to the Black Hat briefings and you might find out about very interesting new ways of, you know, bypassing some kind of firewall, something like this, and go out and buy a more expensive firewall. And because there's a more expensive firewall now, there's a whole lot of people now trying to break that more expensive firewall, which goes in a kind of a loop. So I think there is a situation where some of the real problems are not really being addressed the way it should be. And one of those problems, according to me, is Trojans. And what I think what we want to show you today, really, is that the Trojans can be a big, big problem. And it can be very difficult to detect. And it can be very, very difficult to basically counteract.
Okay.
And now it's him.
English is my first language, but I still get mixed up all the time. I don't have as many excuses as Rudolf does, but you're just going to have to bear with me anyway. We decided that we'd do a quick overview on Trojans, and we weren't exactly sure where we'd start. Okay, and when we were discussing it, we figured eventually that the best place to start would just to be to start right at the beginning. Okay, and if you go back to where the Trojan horse came from in mythology, okay, the bottom line of it for anyone who doesn't know the story was that with the Greek invasion of Troy, the Greeks were losing out big time. Okay, they've had this invasion going for months. Morale was down. They were pounding away at the front gate, and there was just no hope. They were losing their best men. Things looked bleak. Okay, and the bottom line is, all these attacks on the front door failed because the front door was bastion. The front door was hardened. Okay, and eventually what led directly to the fall of Troy was the fact that the Greeks or the Trojans accepted this Trojan horse. Okay, and what Rulof's touched on already today is that this stuff's happening in a big way on lots of some of the bigger networks today. A little while back, Microsoft had a major scare when NT4 had source code allegedly stolen. And eventually it came out that came in from a Trojan attack at some point also. Some of the biggest names in security have fallen because of Trojan software somewhere in their network. What I'm going to do as we go through Trojans is try to discuss how Trojans started off, okay, and why they adapted, okay. And I think it's a pretty good indication of the fact that they've got a real place in the security world just because they still exist, okay. The fact that they're still around means that there's obviously some use for them, and the fact that there's constantly development on them means that there's obviously some sort of challenge, update, and reason why it keeps going forward. We'll quickly go through some of the situations, okay? We'll start going through why the Trojans evolved, the stuff that caused it to evolve. We'll look at back in the days of the friendly net when everyone was using a valid IP if they were connected and nobody bothered with filters or protection. We'll see how the stuff moved on once we started getting stateful filters. Once, how it changed life for the Trojan writers. Okay, and then how things started getting even harder as we started throwing in intrusion detection, personal firewalling, content checking, all of the other stuff that we come up against today. We won't spend a lot of time looking at the valid IP, no filter model. Because I think the perfect counter to that is just the question of get real. We were discussing, we run training, and Charles and I were discussing yesterday that even my mother actually uses a personal firewall on a home computer. Okay, she doesn't know what it is, but when they gave her internet connection, they gave her some Norton personal anti-intrusion detection thing and some personal firewall. If you're connected on the net nowadays, you're running some sort of protection. And so old Trojans, which did simple TCP listens, just waited for connects, fell away very quickly. Again, and people then moved into the model where we started putting at least some sort of filtering on our network. Okay, we started saying we'll block almost everything coming in because we know that everyone out there is not our friend. And the problem with this is the fact that we said that we're going to block most of the stuff. Okay, and most of the guys figured out that most of the stuff just isn't good enough all of the time. And coupled with this, we had the problems that we as firewall administrators kept facing. We had problems of, which at the time were technology dependent. Okay, we had problems with firewalling out high ports. FTP gave us endless hassles because of the back channels. Okay, and then we had config. Then we had config problems. Sorry, somebody just told me. Shh. Then we had config problems until very recently. Okay, we've had some major firewalling brands making really silly mistakes, like allowing in port 53 by default. Okay, these were simple things that gave us a lot of hassle, because if someone were to run a Trojan on the inside of our network, they just had to do a listen on port 53, or we just had to send our stuff in on source port 20 and we were smiling. Okay, and for a long time, the guys who wrote the Trojans did that. They just simply smiled. With stateless filters, all of you guys will know that stateless filters work simply by watching for the SYN packet. Okay, so typically you'd say permit all that's established. Okay, and then just do your filtering based on the SYN packets that try to come past. And that was quickly dealt with. A guy called Arne Widstrom wrote a program that did ACK tunneling that held entire conversations but just never passed a SYN packet through it. Okay, so clearly stateless firewalls were not going to cut it anymore. And so we moved on to where a lot of people are today. We've got firewalls that are doing some sort of stateful inspection. And then we start to say, okay, you can get out, but you can only get out to these ICQ networks. Or you can only get out to this IRC server because we figure you need to. Or you can browse, but you can go out using this proxy. Okay, and again, the technology evolved, and it put a little bit of a speed bump in front of Trojan developers. But again, that didn't take too long. Okay, the guys from CDC with Back Orifice released a really powerful remote systems management tool, okay? Because Back Orifice is not a Trojan, it's got valid uses also. And guys were quick to throw in snap-ins for it, okay? Stuff like GBot and Rattler allowed your Back Orifice to connect to IRC servers where they picked up their commands. Okay, so even with stateful filters, we were having problems just because of the stuff we were still allowing to go out. And then things didn't get a lot better because technology evolved again to get to where we are today. We started to throw in content level checking. We started to throw in intrusion detection that got smarter. Okay, personal firewalls on your machines complain bitterly the moment anything tries to run on them that they don't know about. And so clearly what's needed was another way to try to get out for the Trojan writers to get the stuff out of networks. And at this point we'll break off Trojans a little bit to cover a little bit of covert channels. Covert channels aren't new either. In 85, the official description by the TSC for covert channels was any mean of communications that bypassed your system security policy. Okay, and way back in 96, Frack magazine introduced Locky. Okay, and Locky, which was named after the Norse god of treachery, tunneled entire conversations through ICMP. Okay. And so simply, if you're allowing ICMP to pass through your network, guys were having entire conversations with their Trojans just going through ICMP. In 98, the Hacker's Choice, a guy called Van Hauser, released RWW Shell. He's recently done an update to it. And the idea was an excellent one. Because with RWW Shell, what he did was he tunneled entire conversations through HTTP requests. Okay, so the HTTP request went out, and with responses, with 404 responses that came back, he established bidirectional communication. The idea was excellent and was picked up in 99. HTTP tunnel started doing the exact same thing. Today there's companies that provide the service. You buy the application, run it on your machine, and it allows you to bypass your company's firewall if they're allowing web browsing. The problem is all of this stuff have got certain inherent limitations. Okay, we discussed the problems with the direct model. Firewalls and intrusion detection systems just took them out. Okay, and we saw that ICMP hackery and flag manipulation worked for a little bit, but stateful firewalls started to kill them as well. You started to tighten up your firewall configs, and you more or less took care of guys that were using agents, guys that were going out through IRC channels. For example, you threw in intrusion detection system and simple tunneling techniques no longer worked because these IDSs, these content level checks were picking up the packets and saying, you say that's ICMP, but that don't look like any ICMP packet I recognize. Okay, stuff was getting cut out and it was easy to pick up. We started using authentication on our proxies and it got okay to, if you were planning on tunneling stuff out of your own network because you are running the tunnel. Okay? You are downloading this 20 meg file, putting it on your machine, and it was allowing you to bypass the proxies. Or it was allowing you to bypass your company's filters. And clearly what's needed or what's obvious is that some combination of all of the above is going to be what we need to go forward. I pass you on to my beautiful assistant.
Hi. Okay. Thanks. Okay, so clearly what was needed here was something that's a little bit more advanced. With Gatslag, what we did is we said, the tunneling kind of technologies are very interesting. And there's a whole lot of development on tunneling technologies on the one hand. On the other hand, you have, Trojans that can beam images that's on a webcam across. And there's a lot of advances in the actual Trojans itself in terms of functionality. But really, no one thus far has done a lot of work in combining the two technologies. So what we've done is we've created a kind of a hybrid model that is a combination between a COVID tunnel and a Trojan. And we spend less time working on the features of the Trojan and more time on the actual establishment of a bidirectional communication set. Now, if we look at defenses today, and I think Arun has touched on that, you got your packet filters, stateful or not stateful, you got NAT on the network, authentication proxies. If you want to go out, you got to authenticate to the proxy. You got IDS systems, personal firewalls, antivirus on your PC, content level and protocol checking, devices. You might have reverse proxies, application firewalls, biometrics, the whole thing. I mean, encryption, everything. If we look at how all of these technologies are kind of merged into one network, it could look like this. Can everyone see that? Is it, I can't even see the screen. It's like, I only see a screen that's this wide. Okay, so what you have there is you might have a content level checking firewall that's connected in a DMZ configuration, IDS virus scanner sitting on that DMZ segment that's also unrouted, with the authentication proxy sitting in the DMZ as well. You got NAT on the front side, with the stateful inspection technology before it goes out to another segment that is connected to a router that's also doing some screening so that, you know, some of the ICMP or UDP is screened off right at the router. And, you know, then even it goes to the internet. You got the additional problem of your machine that's inside the network running, personal firewalls, running antivirus, all kinds of interesting technologies on the PC itself. Now, if you look at this network, if you look at a typical network like that, you can understand that you would think, if we had a network like this, you know, we're probably we're not going to have problems with Trojans, right? Wrong. What we will show is in the next few minutes, how we develop certain technologies that will be able to bypass all of that, in one nice single go. So let's have a look at it. Now, Gatslag, how did it actually work? Like I said, Gatslag is a combination between a covert channel and a Trojan itself. It uses a reverse connection, just as the covert channels does. So the connection is really initiated from inside the network going outwards. You got to start there. You're not going to get the packet from outside into that network, right? You got to start sending the data out. The second thing is we also used HTTP to tunnel our data in. We encapsulate commands and output of that commands in HTTP. But I think the big difference, and this is the key to this whole thing, is while other tunneling technologies uses a program that actually makes a socket call out and connects out to port 80 and tunnels the data through that, we don't do that. We use OLE and we control an instance of Internet Explorer. Now, why is that interesting? You'll see later on how that becomes very, very interesting and very relevant to this problem. So really, our requests that we make and the data that we're sending, we never make a socket call. We only talk OLE to the browser, and the browser does the rest for us. The browser is actually making the socket calls. Okay.
Okay, why this works really nicely for us is it gives us a certain level of abstraction. Okay, if we decide that suddenly we want to make our Trojan talk SSL, we don't need to bother with lower level SSL anymore. Okay, we just got to tell the browser, use SSL, and Internet Explorer does it all for us. If you've got intrusion detection systems watching your packets flowing, then that's cool. Your IDS is just not going to see anything. Okay, it gives us a lot of abstraction because we're simply passing stuff to the browser. The browser's going to take care of a lot of this stuff for us. And
this is my slide.
Your slide, my slide.
I thought we agreed on it. Jeez, man.
Now you tell me.
Okay, so if I just can come a little bit back to that. So yes, we encapsulate in Internet Explorer. We don't encapsulate in HTTP. If we look at Gatslag, how Gatslag actually worked, put that down. it received commands in the title of web pages, okay, and it actually posted data back encoded as text files. You'll see that when we get to Satiri, that's changed a little bit the way that we do that because it's not that optimized. And this is the slide you were looking for, Aaron. Reasons why Chatzlach really worked well is that, for instance, if you look at proxy servers, one of the more popular kind of proxy servers is the Microsoft proxy server. A lot of companies actually use it at the moment. Now, what happens with Microsoft proxy servers? There's a fair amount of integration within the Office, different Office products. So normally what would happen is you would have your proxy part of the domain where your domain controller is sitting, so that when a user logs in, he logs into the domain first, right? And after he logs into the domain, when he then wants to surf the internet and he needs to authenticate to the proxy, that kind of happens transparently. The user don't see that. That's, you know, Microsoft provides us with some wonderful technologies. One of them is an attempt of single sign-on. This means that you only have to log into the domain controller when you log onto your machine. And if that credentials match with the credentials on the proxy, then you don't have to log in again when you want to surf the internet. Now, we obviously love that. If you think about it, we only use IE. Okay? So if there's an authentication proxy sitting there, it'd be transparent to us as well. So authentication proxy is not a problem anymore. What's nice about this, as Arun mentioned a little prematurely, is that we can now very, very easily slap SSL on top of that. Okay, we don't need to bother about doing the encryption ourselves. We simply put a little S in front of the HTTP and walk. We got encryption. The problem with the encryption, the problem with the SSL there, is that you got to now realize we are spawning a IE process, right? And we'll talk about that just a little bit later on. If there's any problems on the pages that we are now surfing, like you have a little pop-up that comes up there and says, this certificate is invalid. That's a problem for us because we can't actually, well, as far as I know, press that little yes button to say, I accept that the certificate is invalid. Okay, if somebody knows how to do that in OLE with the browser object, I'll be, you know, happy to speak to you. No, for sure, I mean it. I'm not being sarcastic or anything. So we got to make registry changes, a little bit of registry change before we fire up this thing, so that I don't know if you know, but the setting to accept certificates that's bad is really just a setting that you can set in the registry. You can set that to off, and then, you know, you can surf anywhere, and there might not be a valid certificate, but that's okay. You can also see how personal firewalls are having a bit of a problem here. Personal firewall looks at a foreign process that tries to communicate to the machine or from the machine. But most of the people here, I suspect, that running personal firewalls have set that personal firewall to allow the browser to go out, right? Because otherwise, every time you open a page or you open your browser, you've got to say, yeah, this is a program that I know is cool. So by default, people set that to, yes, the browser can go out, otherwise I can't surf the internet. So the personal firewall really falls out of the loop as well. The other nice thing of using the OLE model is that, you know, Microsoft has been so good to put a browser on every desktop. And that browser is basically the same kind of browser. The model, the OLE commands of talking to that is really the same, which makes this perfectly platform independent. We don't need any special software. We've got the software right there on the box that we need. Now, what we did with Chatzlach, what we have is we have with phone home technology, we call it phone home technology, stuff that makes connections out. You always have the problem that you got to know where your home is. You're phoning home, but where is home? All right? And the way that we try to address this with Chatzlach is to first contact what we call a master site, right? The master site is a static page sitting at A. Take a pick, GeoCities, Yahoo, anywhere, right? It looks like a home page. So what happens is Chatzlach would surf out to the master site, which is more kind of a static site, and pick off that home page, pick off an IP address where the controller is sitting, and it would then then make the connection to that controller. Now the idea there was that if the controller moves around, let's say I've got to get a new IP address or something like that at the controller, then I can just easily change that on the master site and say, well, I'm not sitting here anymore, I'm now sitting here. The master site is supposedly static, okay, and I can control where my Trojan is phoning back home by changing my web page on GeoCities and simply editing that and say, well, now the Trojan's got to connect there. Okay, if we look at the process within Chatzlach, now remember this is still Chatzlach, this is not Satiri, so this is the kind of the same Trojan that we discussed at New Orleans. It first creates an invisible browser. Now that's making an invisible browser is not that difficult. It's just the OLE property that you set. I think it's something show visible to false. And anything you do there, you can start up a Excel spreadsheet, you can start up Outlook, totally invisible. You can't see it. You do see it in the process list. You can't see it as an application, but you do see it in the process list, which is not a worry for us because, again, you know, how many iExplorer processes do you see? People that uses their machines to surf the net won't even notice if they see more than two of those processes. It would then connect, it would then go to the master site. So it serves out to the master site and it finds out where the controller is. It tries to connect to the controller. If it can't connect to the controller for 7 times, it assumes that the controller has moved. So then it goes back to the master site and say, oh, you know, I can't contact the controller at this IP address. Is it possible that you can please, you know, show me where home is today? If it connects to the controller, it receives a reply. It parses that reply, and it actually now performs the function that it needs to perform. Be that uploading files, downloading files, and we get into that later as well, or executing a command, and basically just loops back then to sending a request to the controller. This goes into an endless loop. So this is the way that Chatzlach worked, and we'll let you know just now what the problems with Chatzlach was and why we made some advances in that. But first, I hand you over to
Now I can talk. Okay, to quickly recap why our defenses were failing. We've now lost a slide. Oops. Okay, quickly, just to recap why defenses were failing. Okay, no matter what happens, we worked on a few assumptions here. And that's that most people allow outgoing HTTP. Okay, as tight as you make your network, your CEO wants to read CNN.com when he comes in the morning. Okay, so we figured we'd do the best we could and force him to log into our proxy server before he went out. But then to make things convenient, NTLM authentication does it seamlessly for us. Okay, so if we're doing this behind the scenes, we're firing up a browser, it's no problem. His machine's doing the auth for us and going out anyway. If he hasn't authed or if his password's incorrect for some reason, suddenly he gets a box saying, please log in. What do you think his response is going to be? He types in his password and the problem goes away. Okay, because no process is running, he's seen an NTLM challenge response before. Something pops up on your screen, you do what you have to make it go away. We're all guilty of it. How many times have we hit an SSL site that complained about the certificate? We hit OK. Okay, there's a reason those warnings pop up on our screens. The problem with content level checking and with intrusion detection is that the traffic is all good HTTP. Okay? Rather than pushing stuff through a port, everything that goes through the browser is actually good HTTP. So it's not leaving a good enough signature for guys to pick up on. Okay, it's good HTTP traffic. So IDSs aren't going to notice anything funny either. Okay, you can't tell your IDS to watch for HTTP traffic going through unless you've got a lot more free time on your hands than you should. Personal firewalls, as Rulof said, everyone allows IE to go through. Okay, because that's what it's there for. So personal firewalls may as well just go home also. The authentication process we discussed, things are getting, we try to make stuff easier all the time. It's almost seamless today. And that's all that Hatzlach, or that's what Hatzlach used big time. Okay, the fact that this authentication is so seamless just means that we get to push stuff out seamlessly. The problems with Hatzlach were a few.
We wrote Hatzlach with the controller side running in Perl, and it was ugly. It really sucked, if you think about it. The biggest problem with this technology, and anyone that serious Trojan users and abuses will know that the biggest problem that we have with this kind of technology is that someone can sniff the network, right? And find out where you are sitting. They can actually find out your IP address. So they can see who is controlling that machine. You can stand on your head, it's not gonna go away, because they can plug in a network sniffer or network analyzer, that's not even on the same box. And they can see that commands are being sent up and down to this site. You can use any kind of tunneling protocol that you wish. Your IP address is in there. And this was a problem with Hatzlach. The controller's IP address could have been obtained. The other problem that we had with Hatzlach was that we couldn't handle multiple instances. So let's say you Trojan two people, then that thing would go ape and it would just break. There was no support to handle more than one Trojan. There were no GUI support. Everyone wants to see a GUI, and there were no GUI support. This thing basically ran command line. The other problem that you had was that your controller needed to be online. It needed to be online all the time when you want to use this. If your controller is not online, then the thing simply breaks. You couldn't do batch commands. You could basically send a command, get the response. Send a command, get the response. Send a command, get a response. You couldn't build a list of commands and say, I want to execute this. When this thing comes online, I want to execute these commands, and then I just want to fade away. You couldn't do that. You had to be there. You got to sit there. You got to wait for the Trojan to phone home. And if you don't pick up the telephone, then you've got a problem. There were no concept of a command history. So you couldn't say, well, let's just see what I've done, five commands back. You couldn't get an idea of where we were going. You couldn't have more than one person controlling the same instance of the Trojan. The upload facility to upload files was just, it was crap. The encoding of that was so inefficient, it's just not true. We had, when you want to upload a file that's, let's say, 100K, it would expand that to 400K, in the encoding process, because we were just very, very, very lazy at the time to, you know, do a proper encoding, algorithm. The platform support was not that well, and the stability was not that well. So we didn't really have a lot at the time. We thought we did, but you know, when you start testing it on different boxes and that kind of thing, it just didn't work. One thing that we also can do is session level tunneling, and that's something that we will get into just now. We haven't actually addressed that, but there might be something in the woodworks.
Okay, the problem that interested us the most, okay, from all of these, the one that most needed working on, according to us, was the one that Roloff spoke about first. Okay, the fact that the controller's IP could be seen. Okay, so if you imagine the scenario, for those of you that didn't see Hatzlach working, okay, you've got this invisible browser popping up. And this browser is surfing somewhere, getting commands and running them. The problem is, if an administrator had reason to suspect that your machine was taken, it was trivial to find out. He just had to say, well, where's this box going to? Okay, you look at where the box is making its HTTP requests to, and you've instantly got whoever it was that was running the Trojan. Okay, so from everything, clearly this needs to be sorted out. It's a big problem because
the new version of this. Let's look at some of the design concept in that. We use a totally different design for Satiri. The underlying technology is exactly the same. But really, we went back to the drawing board and said, you know, what are we doing? We're actually saying we need to get a command off a website, right? It's basically a website. We've got to get a command off a website. We've got to execute that command. And the output of that, we need to send back to that website. And we had all of these problems that I mentioned. So I think one thing that we, the uploading of the, once the command is executed, the data that's now being sent back, we need to get onto that server again, like with a kind of an upload page. You've all seen it where you can upload a photo. You know, some of the webmail clients, you can upload attachments. We needed to get the output of our command uploaded to that website. And we really sat down and said, well, you know what, why don't we, you know, get rid of this whole GUI problem with having CGIs on a website itself? Okay, so now you have the concept of a single website out there, right? With an upload facility there. So there's a little page there where you can upload files to. And there's commands on a different section of the web page. And if we can have a way of actually keeping those apart and, you know, populating commands easily, the Trojan fetches the commands, executes the commands, and uses the upload page, which is on a different section on the website, to upload the result. And this fitted nicely in with the whole design, because now we can have CGIs that basically facilitates the GUI, right? You have a little interface. I'll show you just now what it looks like. What's interesting here is now you really have three players. So you have the Trojan, you have your website, and you have your controller. The controller that's controlling the Trojan is now simply surfing to that website, right? Putting in new commands, viewing the data that's coming back. And those commands are being fetched by the Trojan on this side. So we basically countered a lot of problems by just, you know, using that kind of design. The controller's interface we really kept the same. There's basically three commands. You can upload, you can upload and download files, and you can execute DOS commands. And really the idea was not to build a Trojan with a lot of features like keyboard logging and logging, voice and video off the speaker and the microphone and putting that back. Because we believe that with the upload facility, the download facility, and DOS execution, you can just about do anything. I mean, if you want to log keystrokes, then upload a keyboard logger, run the keyboard logger, and get the data back. So really we thought about this and we said, let's keep it simple. We'll do it like that, and that's it. We're not going to, our idea is not to build a super Trojan with a lot of lead features. And the instance problem, handling multiple instances, also just goes away, because now what you can do is you can have a subdirectory, right, for each Trojan. So the Trojan basically has got a unique name. Each Trojan that you send out has got a unique name. We call it an instance name. Got 15 minutes. Jeez. Okay. It's got a unique name. And it basically serves to a structure. It serves to a part of that web page. And within this web page, we can keep the different the instances of the Trojans. We can keep them apart. Okay. So the Trojan simply serves to the website, just as a normal user would do. The interesting part of this is the keeping the IP address hidden, anonymity. Anonymity is like a big word for us. For me, okay. Okay, what do we do about, you know, finding the IP address? Not finding the IP address, hiding the IP address away. When you think anonymity, you think proxies. So, yes, why don't you just go through a proxy? And when you go through this proxy, you know, your IP address is, you must see the IP address of the proxy and not your own IP address. The problem with this is, now imagine you sitting there in that network, right there in the center of that network that I showed you. There might be a proxy already configured, right? So if we go and we change the proxy settings, that user won't go out anymore. Okay? So what we needed is we needed a proxy that is basically running in line with the browser. We needed a proxy that is operating in the browser itself, because we can only do stuff with the browser. We can't really change the settings. And a very good example of that is Anonymizer. How many of you used Anonymizer before? I'm sure a lot of you. And you know, what do you guys do? Now you know how Anonymizer works. Anonymizer really runs within that browser itself, okay? And the IP address that's, if I connect to Anonymizer, where's my traffic going? My traffic is going to Anonymizer, right? It's not going directly to my controller site, the website. So what we've built into Satiri is a thing that basically goes out to Anonymizer. SSL encrypted all the way, which is very nice. SSL encrypted to Anonymizer, logs into Anonymizer with valid credentials. And from there, serves back to our controller site. Now, if you think about this, if you now look at traffic on your network, you only see traffic going encrypted to Anonymizer, correct? You never see the IP address of the real controller, which is perfect for us. Plus, it's sitting within the browser, so we don't need to actually worry about proxies. We only send a form, post a form to Anonymizer, logging us in. And then we just got to know how Anonymizer actually handles its redirection, which is easy. You just say https://anonymizer/http and the website we actually want to go to. And you serve through there. Which makes it very interesting for us. Now, obviously, there are some challenges with and by the way, it goes SSL both ways. So it goes SSL into Anonymizer, and it goes SSL out to the Trojan site, to the controller site, which makes it interesting. Now, challenges with this is, you know, stuff like temporary files. When a connection breaks, it might store some temporary files on the hard drive. There might be something in the browser history that you need to clean up. There might be cookies and stuff that's kept there that you don't want the user to see. But all of that we can handle. I quickly want to show you what it looks like. This is the controller's website. Okay. On the left hand side, you see the command history. Those are the commands that are actually, that I ran on that machine.
Okay, we'll run through a live run of Satiri just so we know that Rudolf didn't actually just paint these with 5 minutes in Photoshop.
Dude. Yeah, no, this is for real. You see there, next to the logo, you see the instance name, which is XXX test. You see the different commands there. You see a set, a dir, you know, that kind of DOS commands that I'm executing. We uploaded a file there called test, RTF. What's very nice about this is, that you can actually, in the frame at the right hand side below, there's just a browsable, directory of that instance, which means if you upload something, and I'm actually going to go to the next slide, if you upload something to that page and you click on it, it opens up within the browser itself, which is now very, very convenient. So if I pull down a doc file or a XLS file of a someone that are Trojans, I can simply click on it and it's going to open up there. I can resize the frames, you know, and I don't even have to pull it down, open it up again. It works right there. I've got my command history. I actually want to talk to you about how we're doing the synchronization between the commands and the actual output of the commands, but I don't think we're going to have time to do that. So if you're interested in hearing how we do that, come speak to us afterwards. Let's have a look and see what it looks like if the browser is not, on the next slide you see there, if the browser is not invisible. So there we see what it actually looks like on the left hand top. That's what it looks like if the browser is not invisible. And you see there's a sequence number with exclamations. You probably can't see it on the screen because it's a little fuzzy, so you might want to look in your book. It's on page 89. I keep messing that up and saying 98. That's on page 89. You'll see there it's got a sequence number, which is just keeping the commands apart. It's got a command, it's got parameters, and it's got a date. And those are separated by hashes. And that's just a format in which Satiri accepts commands. That's actually the command file there, right? On the other side, on the ethereal side, this is what it looks like on the wire. And this is just to prove to you that you can't really see the controller's IP address. It really only goes out to anonymizer. So you can see that it's going to 168.143.1.1314, which is anonymizer itself. The data is also encrypted, so you won't be able to see it. You won't be able to see it at all, what's going on there. Now this slide should have been earlier. Sorry.
That's the slide we spoke through anyway.
Okay, in terms of the demonstration at the New Orleans show, we did a demonstration of Chatzlach in an environment where there was a firewall with NAT. We had a whole bunch of, we actually just had one machine set up to be the firewall. We had a lot of personal firewalls and antivirus stuff running on the victim. Here for the show here today, you can see we have two PCs. Both of these machines have got wireless cards in, so it's going out to the internet from here. We don't have the whole, you know, firewall set up with IDS and that, but
we were running with personal firewalls on this machine. We're going out to the net. It's no connection between the boxes.
Yeah, there's no connection between the boxes. We're just going over the internet. The reason why we don't do it at the moment is, I think after I explain to you how it works, you can see that it's kind of trivial to just put a box in there to bypass it. For sure it's going to work. We have demonstrated that it works with, you know, the different firewall technologies in between. So we're just going to skip right ahead and show you the demo.
Gonna run. Yeah. Maybe run.
Okay, there we got our different instances. I'm gonna go to XXX test. I'm gonna surf out there. Okay, and it starts up with that. Did you start it, Arun?
Yep.
Okay. Let's execute a command like dir, for instance. So we choose exec from there. We say submit. That goes into the left-hand pane.
I can now just say check pending. And you see that now becomes a link. If I click on that, I see the output of that right there on the middle pane. I can, for instance, let's do another DOS command. Let's do a set to get the environment. Command accepted and goes into the list. You see there's a pending there. So it means I can put a lot of commands in there and just wait for it to actually phone home, and it will execute those commands in sequence. If I go and click pending, check pending, see that command has now become a link. So I can click on the link itself, and there you see the output of that. Now let's start doing a little bit of more interesting stuff. I'm going to do a dir on C star dot star. Just going to grab a check. Okay, we do a click pending here, check pending. There you see the C drive. I'm going to go down a bit. Let's have a look. There's a keyboard logger in there. There's, what is it called? Sense.bmp. I'm going to transfer that file to me. So I'm going to do a tx of C, sense.bmp. Okay. Now remember, all of this is going through anonymizer. Right, so there's no direct connection between us. We have four players now. We've got the controller itself, which is me. We got the website that is sitting at Rackspace at the moment. We got anonymizer, and then we got the victim PC, and they're talking through this whole channel.
Which means the Trojan works a lot better here in the States than it does for us at home, because our bandwidth is like two carrier pigeons and a 14-4 modem.
I just want to show you that sense.bmp, Arun, is 1.5 megs big, and we're channeling it through about four different hops here. So I'm not quite sure if my buffer is internal to the there we go. It actually, let's just have a look and see. Yeah, it actually went through. This is, by the way, untested for the first time, the largest file that I've transferred in this thing. we go through and we see there's the file. I'm going to open it right there. Yeah, you see it coming down there at a speed. I love the bandwidth in America. That just rocks. Okay, let's see. Let's have a look and see if it's actually going to go in there. Ah, there we go. So we can scroll along here. Hey? Oh, there we go. There we go. It's just like a blue screen, Arun. Okay, what I want to just show you quickly now is let's do an upload to that machine. So I'm just going to pick something down here that I'm going to transfer there. Go to my computer, C drive. I don't know what I should do. Let's just do this winzip.log. I'm going to put it in C temp. Temp. And I'm going to call it winzip.log. Do a submit. And it's now actually uploading that file first. It goes back to that side. Quickly going to do a dir. Quickly going to do a dir again. Quickly.
Okay, some of the other stuff that we're not going to get a chance to go through right now, for example, is the fact that at this point our controller could just switch off. If we were working from dial-up, for example, we could just unplug at this point, go away, and come back a little later. The Trojan speaks to the controller, finds out who the new master is, and picks up operation just like normal.
There you see it. There's the winzip.log file. So I can do upload, I can download, I can do DOS commands, which is pretty much, you know, what I want to show you today. Quickly going to switch back to this. Taking it further, what we really want to get to is we want to do session level tunneling, which means we can do a session through an encoded web page on one side and a post reply on the other side. I'm not going to go into that because we didn't actually build it. The flow control on that is just very hectic. It's very difficult to do the flow control, and I think that's about what we have time for today.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.